Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this April 3rd, 2023 regular meeting of Warville City Council. We'll open this evening in prayer with Pastor Chuck Davis from Calvary Assembly of God.
Good evening. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, again, we are so grateful to be a part of a great community and thankful for these servants, Lord, that have been, Lord, just brought together, Lord, and have been put in a place of leadership, Lord, through the people of this community, Lord, to serve and to help better it, Lord. And so I pray for wisdom and for knowledge to help guide them and lead them through all the business that has to be done. Lord, I thank you again for your protection over our city workers and our line crews that were out there during these storms. And Lord, I pray that, Lord, we would just lift up the communities, not only ours, but around us and, Lord, around this United States that have been impacted, Lord God, through these tornadoes, through these high winds. And I pray, Lord, that you would bring comfort to those that are grieving. We also pray over our schools, Lord. We've seen so many things happen with shooters in schools, and we just pray for our resource officers, Lord, that you would give them guidance and wisdom, and that you would protect our teachers and students and administrators and those families, Lord God, that, Lord, see those as safe havens many times, Lord, and it's been affected. And so, Lord, we pray, Lord, for your wisdom and guidance there as well. Thank you again for our mayor and for our president and for this city council and for these leaders in this room, Lord God. Thank you again for the opportunity to serve you through the serving of these people. And Lord, we pray for a blessing over our community, Lord, because I believe our community makes a difference in this county. And I believe that this county makes a difference in this state. And I believe that our state makes a difference in this United States. And Lord, we have an impact across the world. So Lord, bless them and strengthen them tonight, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor Chuck. The clerk could please call the roll.
Yes, sir. Hamlin.
Here.
Asparis.
Here.
Shanklin.
Here.
Orson.
Here.
Carr.
Here.
Mosley.
Here.
Wilson.
Mr. Wilson is excused. All right, Mr. Morrison.
Mr. President, I'd like to move that we amend the agenda for tonight's meeting with the following motion. To approve the minutes of the March 13th special meeting, which were included in the council packet.
Very good. Mr. Morrison moves. Do we have a second? Second, Mr. Shanklin.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Thank you. You should have received then a copy of the meeting minutes from the March 20th, 2023 meeting. Do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve the March 20th minutes.
Mr. Larson moves and Ms. Carr seconds.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Hamburg.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Thank you. We have no public comment for this evening.
Mr. President.
Yes.
I think that we move to add that item to the agenda, but we also need to approve the
minutes of the
13th.
Yes.
So I move to approve the minutes of the March 13th meeting.
Okay,
second.
Mr. Spears seconds.
Larson?
Yes.
Carr?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Hamburg?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Shanklin?
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Thank you. All right. So we have no public comment, as I stated, and so we can move on in our agenda to our standing committee reports, and we'll begin with our Parks and Recreation Committee. Mr. Hamburg.
Thank you, Mr. President. Parks and Rec has not met, therefore I have no report. However, last week, or last meeting, we talked about putting a meeting on our calendar. I would like to meet on Monday, May 8th, if that works for our committee and our team. The topics would be the final phases of the skate park and looking at an official launch of the skate park, and then also the Union Depot conversation with the final planning of that project as well.
Okay. Very good. So Monday, May 8th at 7 p.m.?
Correct.
Very good. We will plan on that. Next is our Utilities Committee. Mr. Shanklin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Utilities Committee has not met, therefore I have no report.
All right. Thank you, sir. Our Ordinance and Personnel Committee. Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance and Personnel has not met, therefore I have no report.
All right. Next up is Transportation. Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Transportation Committee has not met, therefore I have no report.
Thank you. Our Health and Safety Committee. Ms. Carr. I'm sorry, Mr. Spiras.
Thank you, Mr. President. Health and Safety has not met, and I have no report for tonight.
All right. Thank you. Now, Ms. Carter, Planning Committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Planning Committee has not met, therefore I have no report.
All right. Thank you. I did not receive a report from Mr. Wilson, so we will assume the same from him. No special committee reports to share tonight, so we'll move on to our administrative reports and Mayor Hamburg.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just like to share who our Employee of the Month was or is for April. Officer Adam Moss has been selected as the Employee of the Month from the Police Department for his outstanding performance and dedication to his job. Adam was sworn in on April 12, 2016, and Adam has demonstrated exceptional skills in law enforcement and is recognized for his commitment to the department's mission. Along with his daily assignment as a police officer, Adam also serves as a school resource officer and a member of the department's tactical team. Adam's responsibilities as a school resource officer include providing a safe and secure learning environment for students, staff, and faculty. He has developed a close relationship with students and faculty members and is considered a valuable asset to the school community. His efforts have contributed to the reduction of school-related incidents and the overall improvement of school safety. In addition to his duties as a school resource officer, Adam is also a member of the tactical team. He has received specialized training in high-risk situations, including hostage situations, active shooter incidents, and other critical incidents. His skills have been critical in tactical operations, and he has been instrumental in ensuring the safety of the public and his fellow officers. Adam's dedication to his job is evident in his daily work ethic. He has demonstrated a willingness to go above and beyond the regular duties, and he truly represents the ideal character and personality that we value at the police department. Adam is dedicated to the department and has displayed a remarkable commitment to his job and to the community. We are proud to have him on our team and grateful for his service. He is a role model and his fellow officers, to his fellow officers, and an inspiration to all those who strive for excellence in law enforcement, and that's from Chief Birkbeck. And we have not been able to schedule lunch yet since he's a school resource officer. We had that once before, so we may end up doing that when school's out. We'll figure it out here. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Very good.
I will address Resolution 1323 when we get to that.
I'm sure the school cafeteria would accommodate you if you wanted to have your
probably,
lunch there.
Probably so. Would. We did that once. Yeah.
Just pick pizza day. That's the thing you want to
do. That's every day, I think.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Thanks. From what I hear. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. We'll move on to our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. The contractor is currently out reinstalling the fencing for the dog park. We do expect that to be done in the next few days, weather permitting with the amount of rain we've had. So that's come along pretty well. The skate park concrete pad has been staked out, so if you go out there, you can kind of, it takes a lot of visualization still, but you can kind of visualize how it's going to look when it is completed. So that project is moving along as well now, just waiting on the contractor to be able to get in here and get rolling and get the dirt moving. Unfortunately, it's more like mud right now, but so definitely keep everyone in the loop in regards to the schedule on that. Mr. McFerrin and I finished interviews for the staff engineer position last week. We did have two great candidates that were the final candidates, and we are meeting in the morning to finalize our selection and make an offer, and we'll definitely keep you in the loop on that, and hopefully she'll take the position, and I would definitely plan to ask her to be at the meeting out on the Park and Rec meeting for the downtown project as well. So moving right along on that as well, sir. So that's my report for tonight.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, we'll move on then to our Utilities Director, Mr. Brediger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just I think everybody pretty much weathered the last two Saturday windstorms we had there. So the 25th of March storm was took us a little bit longer to recover, mainly because the winds were so sustained during that. It's actually dangerous hanging up there 35, 40 feet up in the air with 50 mile an hour winds blowing on there. But you know, we had everybody back early in the evening. I think our crews finally came in Sunday morning about 2 in the morning. Last Saturday afternoon, had about the same number of customers out there, mainly in the Kidron area. We had some in the Burton City area, some on the outskirts of Dalton. The first Saturday storm, we did have some inside city limit circuit. It was down, had maybe 100 customers out there. But at the height of both of those events, we had probably between 400 and 500 customers out. But you know, had things pretty much cleaned up and wrapped up come Sunday morning. First Energy, their customers are still out. They took them till Thursday, the week before last, and they're still talking about Thursday this week to deal with the ones before theirs. Fortunately, we don't have as much territory as they folks out, but we do have the advantage of bringing in mutual aid if we need it. We did not require that, although we did send a crew this week along with several poles out to the village of Wapakoneta out in northwestern Ohio. They lost 60 poles on one of their transmission lines coming into the city. So pretty fortunate. Our tree trimming efforts worked. That was mainly the bulk of the problem, that we had big trees kind of combined with a lot of rain that we had in the days leading up to that, kind of softened up a lot of roots. But trees all over the place. One tree alone took down six spans of wires, broke poles, damaged transformers, things along that line. But that was about the mantra throughout the region, that where a lot of our customers are at, and some of our neighboring communities. It wasn't really too bad, but it just took time. And anything more than a moment is too long from a customer perspective. But our crews did a great job. They understand the mission. They did all that stuff, you know, accomplished all that safely during the whole period. So I do commend the work and efforts that those guys did try to restore life to everybody else back to normal as soon as they did. But things are quiet on the water and the wastewater side. And we do have the utilities report and a report following the end of the agenda tonight. That's all I have.
Pretty good. We'll look forward to that. We'll move on to our finance director, Ms. Strimley.
Thank you, Mr. President. The only item I have this evening is the distribution of the fund balance report for January and February. There are several funds with negative net income. This is simply a timing issue. We have some large expenditures that occur in January and February, so we should see those level out, those funds, over the next couple of months. If you have anything that you'd like to go over in detail, you can give me a call. And I would just ask for a motion from Council to approve this report subject to audit.
I'll move to approve that report subject to audit.
Thank you. Mr. Orson moves. Mr. Mosley seconds.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Thank you. Move on to our law director, Mrs. Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report this evening.
All right, thank you. I just have a quick update on our video camera that we are recording council meetings with. As you can see, we have a very basic setup here, and we've mentioned before that council wants to upgrade our technology package here to be able to provide a greater access to our community. For now, we have this basic setup, and I'm open to feedback from council, administration, and the community if that's adequate to get us by until we, you know, come up with whatever our next step is. We can continue with that route. Otherwise, I'm open to ideas, and we can get together and talk about them. So that's all I have. So we can move on then in our agenda to old business.
Resolution 1223, I move this, oh, we had no old business.
That's right, so having no old business, we want a new business.
Thank you, sorry. Resolution 1223, I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second.
Second, Mr. Spiros.
Mosley.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Spiros.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
All ayes, motion passes.
Resolution 1223, a resolution authorizing participation in the ODOT road salt contracts awarded in 2023 for road salt for the city of Orrville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fortunately, we did not have much snow this year, so we do have a good supply still available for next winter. However, we will be making an order. We typically order anywhere from 1,000 to 1,100 tons. It'll probably be closer to the 700 or 800 ton range this year. We did pay $51 last year, and based on supply demand, that may go down some, though I'm always hesitant to say that, just never know. But annual resolution, ODOT does a great job with the contract part, and we've been lucky with the contractor as well. So definitely recommend moving forward with this. When I arrived in 09, we had a contract that wasn't with ODOT, and it was $140 a ton.
Oh, my.
Okay. Yes.
What, do we have a requirement, a minimum, that we have to get each year?
So we're required to get 90% of the order, but can it go up to 110%? But we tell them how many tons we want, and that's just something we work through based on, one, our available space, and two, historically. This year, with having a supply, we will scale it down some. Even if we order, say, 800, then we'll still be able to go 880, so we'll have a little bit of flexibility. But at this point, I expect it'll be in that range.
So you're able to forecast what you need and then create the PO for that amount, then you have to follow what you're, correct?
So kind of the tricky part of this is, as soon as council approves it tomorrow, I will put it in the ODOT system what we're requesting. So it requires a great deal of guesstimating, if you will, based on historical numbers.
Sure.
We always order, you know, we always like to have too much to not enough. Mm-hmm. I think in the 15 years I've been here, one or two times maybe we had to kind of reach out to either Worcester or to ODOT and get a little bit, but it's pretty rare that it happens. Normally it's the other way around, and knock on wood, and hopefully we have more mild winters coming forward. So
thank you.
Yes.
Do we take possession of that over the course of the summer, or do we deplete our own stores and then you have deliveries made?
Yes, sir, we do deplete our own. So historically, ODOT did do a summer salt bid, and that was based on those harsh winters that we had a few years ago where people were depleted and gave you the opportunity to kind of to resupplement your supply of salt, you know, refill the bins, if you will. They have not done that over the last few years, so it will be just as you said. We'll use ours first, and then we'll order. And you don't order it all, obviously, at one time. You can order, you know, 50 tons, 100 tons. And it's kind of ordered as winter goes on.
Yes, sir. Are we pretty much fully stocked?
Probably? We are definitely fully stocked, yes, sir.
Very good.
So under the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days, be suspended.
Second.
Ms. Carr.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Ms. Spiros.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
All ayes, motion passes.
I move resolution 1223 be adopted as read.
Second.
Mr. Shanklin seconds.
Spiros?
Yes.
Shanklin?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Carr?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Handwerk?
Yes.
All ayes, motion passes.
Resolution 1323. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Mosley.
Shanklin?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Carr?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Handwerk?
Yes.
Spiros?
Yes.
All ayes, motion passes.
Resolution 1323, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements without bidding with JM Outdoor LLC for the installation of public art in the downtown and declaring an emergency.
Who'd like to comment on this?
I can talk with that. There's been snippets of this project that's gone out over the last few months especially, and I wanted to try and get a little chronological order of how this all came about. But probably shortly after the dry cleaner building was torn down over there. I don't know how long ago that was now, but 3-4 years maybe?
Yeah, probably
maybe
so.
More.
Yeah.
But about 3 years ago, Wendell Hosteller, who walked all over town with his wife at night, I saw them on my way down here tonight, came into my office and he said there needs to be something on that building. That wall drives him nuts. It's just this big blank piece of property that they could have something nice on. So I started to think about that a little bit. The dry cleaning building, as I said, has been down for a while by then. And Wendell had seen some other artwork on some of our buildings in town that have already been done, and then also in other cities as well. He brought pictures of train engines with him and to look, that he had made copies of different engines. And it was like, those were pretty cool. And then his feeling was, since it's right near the depot area, that would be the neat thing to do for that. And of course, we didn't even know then that we were getting this grant money to improve that depot area, so that'll make it even nicer. But around that same time, and there was absolutely no connection that I know of, Councilman Hanwork and Justin Hayslip, and I think a couple other guys hanging around with you guys too, were talking about the same type of thing on that building. And CITES had sent me a picture of a train engine, and it was very similar to what Wendell brought me, which was pretty cool. And I really liked it myself, too. I don't know how many of you had H.O. Gage trains when you were little, but I had plenty of train sticks. Those were fun. From there, I had begun talking with Steve Wheeler and Kristen Ensley about making something like that happen, what the possibility of what we could do for that. One of my first conversations was with the owner of the Pavilion Insurance Building, which is that building that still has the existing wall there. And he was in favor of the project in general, for the general idea. He mentioned that the building was over 100 years old. When I left that meeting with him, I thought, I don't know if we want to be messing with a building that's 100 years old, because there's going to be some structure onto this, even if it's just, an artist painting on the building or whatever. And I didn't want us to be the ones that did something and all of a sudden their building leaks or the bricks are falling apart or something like that. So started talking a little bit more about what we could do. I think Kristen Ensley met with me one day, and I think Kristen Larson, she might have been with us that first time, because I had talked to her pretty early. But we met over there at that lot just to let a person look at it. This person was Ben Harbaugh from Ohio Outdoor, and they're actually the ones that do a lot of billboards around the county. You see them. His initial thing was, yeah, we could do something there. He was thinking of the single pole that they have on those big units that you see. I didn't really like the idea of how that would look down there. And so I said, is there any other way we can do it? And I actually suggested telephone poles, because we have lots of access to poles. And he said, well, the only thing with that is if you get any of those that would warp on you, that's going to be a problem for that. So that kind of nixed that idea. But he said, we would use I-beams for that and just sink them in the ground. He said, you probably, for something the size we're talking about, he said, you'd probably need 5 of those lined up, spaced out evenly with this project, and then they would actually build the structure framework on that and then mount what this picture will be on there. We wanted to stay away from the building, as I said, so this will be like 6 feet away from the building, so there's room to work behind it, mow behind it or whatever. We would do some landscaping probably underneath there, but the framework itself would actually be about 6 feet off the ground. The size of the picture is going to be 12 feet high by 30 feet wide, so it's probably not too far off of real scale train engine. but I thought I would let you take a look at that here in just a minute, because it's almost done. Kristen Larson's been working on this for us for quite a long time. She did a lot of study work, just talking to people at the Railroad Heritage Society and everything else, just to get some ideas on this. And I know we spent lots and lots of time just on the internet looking at train engines. It's amazing how many pictures of those there are. But I'll show you some pictures here. I kind of lifted these off of Kristen Ensley this afternoon. She made these for her design review board, which this will go to next. So if you don't want one, just give it back to me after the meeting, and I'll give them back to her. If so, we can make another couple of copies for her if we need to. But that's kind of what we're looking at. Ben Harbaugh is the guy that came from Ohio Outdoor to help us figure this out. As soon as I saw his name, I thought, well, this is not going to work out. If you're a Buckeye family or a Buckeye fan, and you see the name Harbaugh, that just doesn't make any sense. But he assured me he was not related to him, so we were able to do that. Hoping that we can get this started soon. I was not aware, and Ben felt bad. He said, I can't order materials until we get it passed on council. And so here I was thinking that stuff was going to be sitting up there waiting for us, and it's not. He can't order it until. And he said, we're looking at 5 or 6 weeks till the stuff would get in for that. But that would still get us done early summer. You know, we'd like to definitely have it done before the 4th of July. And of course the rib test down there later in the summer. So that's where we're at with that. I didn't want to bring this to council any earlier than this because I've learned one thing over the years. When you get an exciting project coming, don't start talking about it because it might not happen. You know, there's lots of things that can happen to different projects along the way. And it's no fun to have to say, yeah, we're not going to get to do that one. So this looks like we should be in good shape as long as it's approved by council and we can get started. So if there's any questions at all, I went through this quicker than I was going to and skipped some stuff and can answer any questions that you might have, or if you don't, then that's fine.
Any questions or comments? Mr. Mosley.
Just one question. Obviously, for one, I'm definitely a fan of public art. No, 110%.
I didn't hear that. Well,
so I'm a fan of public art.
Oh, yeah. And, okay.
You know, this project definitely sounds exciting for me. For me, to be 100% honest, it's, I mean, I know that, you know, we should make it, we need to make a decision to get them going or doing understand how that stuff goes. I did get a comment from a citizen about it that's seen, you know, the resolution. Obviously, the first thing was emergency. I was able to address that one. But here's the comments. I'm going to read them if you don't mind. This resolution gives no details as to what public art is or where it's going and what form it will take. For all anyone knows, it could be a large nude sculpture or some political religious artwork that would or could offend most people. Why is this emergency read? Good grief. We have streets that need to be repaired and places where there are no catch basins causing drainage issues on properties. Aren't there issues more of an emergency nature? I obviously, where I'm at right now is I want to be confident in telling people, you know, hey, this is why this is important. Like I said, I think, me personally, Daryl, I love this idea. You know, however, I got to be able to confidently defend it, you know, when I get comments, you know, like that, if that makes sense to you.
Well, I would certainly say as far as, like, we have streets, there's always going to be streets, and we put millions in the streets every year. So to me, you've got to have some other things. That's why we kind of found ourselves with the park out there a few years ago. We always thought our park was fine until we realized there's a lot of stuff that could be done to make it a lot better. And I think those are things that citizens look for too. You know, we heard criticism when we put the dog park in. Yeah, this is artwork. There'll be some people who don't care for it at all. But what Kristen does is paint the picture. John might know better than me, but she thought this big or something like that. And then they blow it up on vinyl. And so it'll actually be a vinyl hanging up there. And I asked Ben how long we can expect to get out of that. He said, well, probably 5, maybe 6 years, depending on what you think fading looks like and that sort of thing. But he said the good part of it is the major expense here is just to put the structure up. the vinyl itself, he said, you can redo that same picture for $600. You know, and if you do that a couple of times, that's not really a big deal. Or he said, you can also change the picture. If you get tired of that one and you want to do something different, you can do that. He said, we've done other places where, you know, they'll do one for the Christmas season or something if you wanted to get that far. But he said they would come back and put those up if you wanted to change any. I don't think we're thinking that way right now, but that's a possibility for down the road if somebody wanted that. But yeah, to me, this is one of those things that, you know, people will come back sometimes to Orville and say, yeah, we just visited such and such city. They had the coolest artwork down there, and why can't we get some of that? And so the only way you get kind of that kind of stuff is to get started. And like I said, we've got some. Smith-Berry painted some stuff on their building years ago, and we have it up at Runyon's and some other places. Justin Hayslip's got some on the back of his. So it's out there anyway. But I thought this would be especially nice for the depot area, especially with the Rib Fest and all the people that are down there and all that sort of thing.
I agree. And I'll, in case anyone else has a question about what it means to make something an emergency, any resolution that we pass, there's a 30-day waiting period before that resolution goes into effect. And so all declaring a resolution an emergency does is waive that 30-day period. And so in this case, materials need to be ordered, we need to get moving on it, and so you'll see council often have something be declared an emergency. And the only purpose for that is because we have some kind of a pressing need, we need to get something ordered or a contract signed or something like that, so we waive that 30-day waiting period. So that's all the emergency clause is, in case anyone else might be watching may have that same question. I think we had some other comments too, or have those been addressed? Yes, Mr. Spears.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick question. I apologize if I missed it, but what was the cost and what was the portion that would be grant funded for it?
So we have $25,000 in the capital budget.
Okay.
There aren't any grant funds specifically to this project. I think what the mayor was referring to was what CJ had mentioned in regards to the large project that will be occurring adjacent to that area over the next year or so.
Right. Okay.
And we had talked about trying to get some grant money for this a couple of years ago, but then we ended up using that for a different project. So we weren't ready to do this one yet anyway.
And you had said the larger portion was just the structure itself, and you'd
talked
about
for sure,
switching
yeah.
it out with
yeah.
something different.
Yeah,
wouldn't
yeah that's
near
one
the cost
and done. Once that's up, it's done.
So. Sure.
Mr. Shanklin.
How much did you say that this was going to cost roughly?
I think we have budgeted $25,000.
$25,000.
Correct. Yeah.
So what was the 30 in the email that we received? The estimate?
Is that an email from Mr. Wheeler today, you mean?
No, Ms. Inslee.
We all received that?
Oh, the design review board?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a figure she was working with in case there's some overages.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there will be. We have some secondary things that will go with that, but that's the basic cost for the structure.
And then...
Yes, Mr. Moser.
And there's just one other thing. Obviously, I showed our appropriations for our budget, you know, to the same person. She had something printed off of our website that didn't have the downtown art project on it. So I don't know if that's just, you know, us not updating the budget on our website or what that.
Yeah,
I'll put that on. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's probably just not updating, you know, unless we add that.
Now,
it
seems
that
2023,
since it was just approved at the last meeting, it may not be updated yet.
Okay. Any other additional questions or comments? Mr. Shankman.
I don't know if now the appropriate time, but the emergency, the way it reads in here is that a resolution is hereby declared to be an emergency measure necessary for the immediate protection and preservation of the public peace, health, safety, and general welfare of the residents of the city of Orville, and for the further reason that timely installation is needed due to seasonality of work and project. The only thing that I see would even remotely be an emergency in this instance is the cost of materials. I don't see any reason for public peace, health, or safety involved in this at all.
That's the standard language for...
That goes with everything.
Yeah, and so it's the additional language says, and for the further reason, that's what describes this, the seasonality of the project and the urgency of the materials to get it done by the 4th of July.
I'll address that as well.
Yes.
The Ohio law requires the first part, the part that you see recurring, public health, safety, and all of that language. And so we are required to give two reasons. So the second reason is usually the one that's more specific when we draft legislation, the seasonality in this instance or the materials. So, and any resolution that you see or ordinance that you see that has an emergency provision, we are required to put both reasons.
Yes, Mr. Moser.
Is there a way to word this legislation so if someone 4 years down the line knows exactly what this was tied to, or is that...
Do you mean the public art nature of it? I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah, so reading Resolution 1323, I'm hoping that this is not our only public art, you know, project that we have. You know, so is there any way to word this so someone in 5 years can look at this resolution and say, oh, this is a big train, you know, mural that was there? That way I don't, you know, that way we don't get questions saying, hey, what is this resolution about? So does that make sense?
The resolution is to approve a public art installation. And so it's an administrative decision on what exactly the nature of that will be. That's my view.
Okay. So an agreement with this JAM Outdoor LLC specific to this particular project.
Okay. So our resolution shouldn't read as in, or your citizens won't really understand it by reading our past resolutions. I mean, they have access. I guess I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. So when we look at a resolution online, because it's all public, it's on our website. If I'm a regular citizen, I read Resolution 1323, I have no idea what public art. Obviously, the public art and what it is obviously an administrative decision. It's not our decision. I guess that's why.
Mr. Mosley, are you asking for a language within the title which states maybe on city property formerly known as the Bowman Building property or something? Something to signify where it's at, so if someone were looking later, they'd be like, oh, it's that one there.
Yes, yes. Gotcha. I'm hoping that we see more public art around this community.
Sure.
I go to Louisville, they have an umbrella alleyway, and, you know, I mean...
We can't do an umbrella alleyway. We've got to do something better.
But what I'm saying is if there's a way to where, you know, the next generation could look at this resolution and say, hey, you know, Mayor Hanwork started resolution. He started this, you know, public art with Resolution 1323. In this right here in this room. Does that make sense?
All of this will be reflected in the minutes. This entire discussion will be reflected in the minutes, and it's also archived on our video.
I think the purpose of this resolution specifically is the framework, the structural, as you've indicated, the banner, you know, the banner or whatever it is, it could be changeable, and at the price point we've discussed, it wouldn't be necessarily a resolution that comes back to council.
It's only the last 5 years. So in 10 years, it'll be the same infrastructure, but just a different
art. Correct.
Right.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, so the...
That makes sense.
The resolution is to approve the installation of that.
Of the actual...
Right. And then...
Infrastructure.
What is displayed and changed, and you don't want to lock yourself down in a resolution with that.
Okay.
So, Mr. Shank.
I have one more question. Can you explain the without bidding? Why this isn't being bid out?
So under state law, you are not required to state to bid anything under $50,000. So that's kind of normal protocol for anything under the bidding limits. You know, some items in that range, especially something that's a little more popular other than this type of structure, you may get quotes. So, but yeah, obviously we're always looking for the best price as part of it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And bidding is a very regimented process to versus just getting a quote. So there's some very technical aspects to actually putting something out to bid.
Well, and if it helps any on that it wasn't official bidding, but I looked for artists all over the place. I called, there's a thing on my phone with Thumbtack is what it was called, and they were supposed to be able to connect you with artists and so forth. The one guy I talked to said, oh, as soon as I told him what size we were talking about, I said, oh, I don't do anything like that. So he was out. Looked at pictures, like I said, forever, because you can buy those pictures offline, but you have to get permission from the artist in order to use them or to change them like we were going to do. So we did do some checking. Yeah.
Not so concerned with the artist portion as the contractor portion, which I don't think Kristen puts I-beams in the ground, does she? So that's my concern with it, is that.
Well, we have the contractor specified in the resolution, I believe. Don't
correct. That's yeah. Why I was asking about the no bid.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Very good. Yeah. Something like this is pretty specific. A lot of times you don't have a lot of players in that space. Yeah. Mr. Mosley, I believe you have
For one, Mayor, I want to say that you got the best artist in the county for the job. So good job on hiring artists.
I won't take any credit for it. Like I said, London Hosteller came to me, and then CJ and Justin did after that. So
I will tell you, as far as now, it makes sense. Well, I appreciate you guys talking me through this. You know, we're approving an infrastructure to put artwork up there, not the actual artwork. Mm-hmm. Now we're on the same page. That makes sense. I appreciate you guys being patient and explaining that to me.
This is not anything like we've ever passed together, I believe, as a body. Public art is something completely new. Streets, no problem. We got that down. Yeah. But yeah. Public art's a different story.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
Just the clarification again that the emergency isn't an emergency, an urgency of passing it. It's the speed with which it actually takes place once it's passed. Once the mayor signs it, then it can happen, rather than waiting 30 days for no good reason. I'm going to say 75% of the things that we pass in a given year are declared an emergency. Probably higher.
Probably everywhere.
And that's because of timing. It's become even more common since COVID and supply chain issues and things like that. So it's got nothing to do with trying to push an issue through. It's getting a job done.
Yes, Mr. Spears.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to kind of go off of what Councilman Morrison is talking about, you also got to consider that we also don't vote and pass everything on first reading. So when we talk about, we're just pushing it through, we're not when we get to multiple readings. And once it's voted on and we've agreed, yes, this is something we want to move forward, that's where we declare it an emergency so we can get started on what we've agreed is ready to go. Thank you.
Okay. Very good.
And I will say that given the time constraints and the desire to have this thing in place before festival season, whatnot, here in town, I move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate dates be suspended.
Second.
Mr. Handwork.
Morrison.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Handwork.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
No.
Motion passes.
Very good.
I move ordinance, resolution 1320.
Well, no. You can't. We're not enough.
Just also, enough. Three quarters have not voted to in the affirmative. Okay, very good. We will move on then to our next item on the agenda.
Resolution 1423. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second,
Mr. Shanklin.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Handwork.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Morrison.
Yes.
All eyes, motion passes.
Resolution 1423, resolution authorizing the Safety Service Director to enter into an agreement with Orrville City Schools to provide an additional school resource officer, SRO, and declaring an emergency.
Very good. Any questions, comments on this one?
Sorry, we're working on something else back here.
Oh, okay. We're on the resolution.
So, Mr. Ritchie, the school superintendent, approached me a little while ago in regards to potentially adding another school resource officer to be present in the schools. Currently, we have one that is two-thirds funded by the Orrville City Schools, one the city provides that also is able to respond to calls if needed. And then this one would be the third one, so that all three schools have an officer presence. To be very honest, I approached Mr. Spears about that at that time and said, but don't get too excited, because I don't know how easy it's going to be to find an officer. It wasn't easy to find an officer. We are now in the process of hiring two full-time officers, one that we think would be a fantastic candidate for this SRO position, has previous experience in other communities as an SR. The other would fill a vacant position that's currently in the police department. So we're not hiring extras, but there's two vacancies. There'd be one vacancy filled, and then the other would fill the SRO position. Mr. Ritchie has also offered considerable financial support to make this position happen. So with that being said, I am recommending that we move forward, especially with this candidate available to us, who I think has the ability to be a tremendous asset to us and really add to that. We already have fantastic SROs, so it just would be another one that would be available. But definitely asking for approval tonight if possible, because we are in the middle of the hiring process. Decisions have to be made, and would love to move forward with Mr. Ritchie. We have all the financial part detailed already. It's just a matter of working through any kind of logistics and fine print in the agreement. So,
Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have been in contact with Mr. Ritchie and some of the board members. They are excited about having an officer in the third building. Like he said, they did offer to pretty much fund this other officer. I think last I talked to them, they were trying to work out some other details with it. But I believe having three officers in each building to respond with things that's going on in schools across the nation is a fantastic idea, plus it gives us another officer.
Yes, sir, I agree.
Yes, Mr. Hayward.
Mr. Wheeler, what are the hours of the SROs? And then would we have somebody just designated as an SRO, or would they also be a part of the force, or how would they do that?
So currently our SROs we have floating SROs. We have a couple that work at the different schools. None of the current SROs are really wanting to do that on a full-time basis. This individual would come in at a full-time basis as an SRO. She would work the normal school hours as far as when they're open. We also normally, Mr. Ritchie also normally asks that we have officers available for particular sporting events and those kind of things. So she or another officer will be available for that as well. The beauty of this is that when school is not in session, then this individual will be available to us to do police type stuff. I think the way the chief sees this is an opportunity to maybe have some presence in the, not that we don't already, but even more presence in the park and those kind of things that kind of put her in places, particularly in the summertime when school is out, that maybe we could use a little more additional police presence around.
Does that funding include the time that she's?
It is
as well.
Yes, sir. That was part of the agreement. Potential agreement is that it will be funded 12 months a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Mosley.
Yeah. So the only thing that they were trying to figure out was the overtime. Is that correct?
Small details, overtime,
yeah.
Presence at sporting events, those kind of things.
Just and he pretty much said, "I'll pay for it."
Yeah.
The entire offseason.
Do we happen to know what that financial commitment is tied to? Is that something that after 3 years could just go away through the school system?
That's one of the things we're working through. He feels very good about the 3 years. I don't know where the school's dollars are coming from. I don't know if it's federal funds or where those dollars are coming from.
Any other questions or comments?
That sounds like a pretty good deal for us. I move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Shanker.
Mosley.
Yes.
Hanward.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Move resolution 1423 be adopted as read.
Second.
Second, Mr. Asparis.
Hanward.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you very much. We'll now move to this portion of the agenda where we'll have an annual report by our utility department and the director, Mr. Brediger. So if you just give us just a moment, we'll take a moment to reset the room.
5.6 is 83%. 3.4 is 75%. We have 5.6.
So we have to count it out of the total members, though, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember how the wording is.
You have to have 5.25, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's on the total board is the way the wording is. Yeah. So you can have one and a seven.
Then you have 0.25 first on the first area.
No, that's fine. I had my mind rolling. I couldn't remember how it was worded.
I did not do that.
Yeah, I wish I did do it.
Like I said, the other one, I think it's the right plan, it's just that page.
Yeah. I'm going to look at today. Is that going to do you the other row off?
No, that looks good. Yeah, that's fine. Yep. Push what forward?
Your podium.
Yeah?
Yeah, then I have you.
For what?
I have you and the street.
What do we want to do that for?
Because I want you, everybody wants to see you.
That's right.
That's good right there.
Wow. All right, that's good.
No, it has to show how it causes things. The lighting is not what I would want.
We need makeup?
There goes the, my freshman year of college in HR studies, I took a film class, so.
I'm using old technology because the laser doesn't work on the TV for some reason. So I have to upgrade the TV some more, or else I have to get a new laser. But the old guy's way of doing things, I suppose. All right, we're ready to go? Good. All right, thank you much. I'm Jeff Brediger, the utility director for Oroville. I'm on my 36th year here with the utilities, and I've been the utility director for the past 13 years. So we're here to talk about the utilities annual report. Some of the slides you'll see here are similar to ones that you've seen in the past. Some people like to see some of the information presented the same way. In your council packet that was emailed out, you also have a detailed copy of this slide presentation. It has all the notes in it too, so there's a lot of additional background information and technical and some other statistical stuff that's included here too. So I won't be going through all of those individual details, but those are there. And this presentation will also be on the utilities website here. After we present it to the utility board at their next meeting. But to give a little bit of background, which I believe most people in this room are aware of, the utility board is a separate entity that oversees the utility. The board is appointed by the mayor. The board hires the utility director who operates and maintains and oversees the day-to-day operations of all three of our utilities. All of our board members are there. Our newest board member, Joe Messenger, recently came on board this year. Mr. Korfman's here in attendance. Utility board meets opposite of city council. Just a few of the highlights for this year. We'll talk about a few more of these in a little bit more detail, but when we looked at our budget and appropriations this year, utilities has the lion's share of the expenditures, gives it a breakout of between the three departments where a majority of the money is spent.
We were able to keep our electric rates frozen again this year. We've had the same rate structure in place since summer of 2016. We did place an order for three of the transformers as part of the second transmission interconnection line. Those are still another roughly a year and some change out before we take delivery of those. We'll talk about our several of our projects there, but one of our projects, the natural gas plant located up in Fremont, Ohio, who supplies a majority of the power that that we distribute out to our customers. We added our an additional 2 megawatts capacity from that facility this year. And some of you were involved, or at least aware, of some of the water infiltration study that's being conducted by the wastewater treatment plant to try to curb a lot of the excess water infiltration coming into the plant. Is kind of taxing the plant's capacity, and the goal here is try to mitigate a lot of that so we don't have to add capacity onto the plant just to deal with rainwater coming in. And that program's been working out pretty good for us so far. We'll talk a little bit about the water and the wastewater utilities. These are just pictures of those, but those are two older utilities that we have in place. Our water utility, to give you a sense, processes over 1.5 million gallons of water a day. And we treat in the neighborhood of about 2.2 million gallons of wastewater every day. So large facilities are large needs for a community our size. The water facility was designed to provide all the water to the power plant back when we were operating 24/7, so we have plenty of capacity. We're only utilizing about a third of that water plant today. Wastewater facility, by the same token, it's a relatively small facility, but we actually have the capability of treating a community of with a population of 30,000 customers there, and that's mainly due to our large industrial customers we have, like the J.M. Smucker a facility and a couple other larger industrial customers that use large volumes and require large treatment volumes that run through our facility. This gives you a general makeup of where the revenues come from. Ms. Strimlin will be presenting her annual report here next week, and she'll be able to get into the dollars and cents a little bit more. But these revenues and usages really don't vary too much from year to year, but does give you some kind of sense on where the breakout is from a residential and commercial and industrial perspective. Our top water customers, this chart also doesn't vary too much year to year. Our largest water and wastewater customers are our two largest food producers in town, by no accident, Smucker's and Smith Dairy. This gives you a sense on where our water and wastewater rates are relative to the state. Relatively low in the wastewater area, although we are looking at some needs going forward that we may see some adjustments necessary in the the coming years. We're in pretty decent shape with respect to where our water rates are relative to the state, and a lot of these comparisons are. It's tough just to look at the state comparisons because the communities and the facilities they have back in home are generally unique to themselves. They're in different stages of age and in capital needs, but to the extent you can kind of put everything in one box and say, in general, across the state, where do you stand? The electric utility, as you're aware, we've in the city owns all three of the utilities. All three of these utilities are nonprofit. The youngest of the three is the generation plant. Even though we have been reduced from a operating perspective down to only operating that plant during peak times, we still have the capability to provide all the energy to our customers at any given time on there. So we don't operate as often, but when we do operate, We can meet all of our customers' needs in the case that there is an issue with the grid. And that has not changed for decades. One of the things that people are talking about is with climate change and things on the environment and things along that line. Really since 2016, 2017, when the new EPA regulations impacted the way the plant was operating, you can kind of see where our CO2 emissions are. And CO2 emissions are one of the bigger precursors to greenhouse gases. So there's been a lot of reduction from the years of 2010 and prior to where we have typically operated the past handful of years. So we've made some, although they've been forced changes, but they are environmentally friendly changes nonetheless. This just kind of gives you a quick view on where the various sources of energy come from today down here, but we always share this chart on the way things used to be up until 2013, where the plant generated all the energy other than purchasing power on the market when the plant was down for outage work or things along that line. And then in 2015, when some of our projects that we went in with other association members, we started diversifying our energy resources to kind of lower our risk and plan for the future. You can kind of see how that's kind of evolved. But probably more importantly, you see that not that long ago, the plant was supplying most of the energy. And then the past couple years, we've only been supplying roughly about half of the energy to our customers. And then the bulk of that has come from our Fremont natural gas plant and our market purchases. But the one thing as part of this diversification, we do have a pretty decent percentage of renewables in our portfolio, and we'll talk about those a little bit more during the presentation. Here's where our retail sales come out there, where, and this really doesn't change too much year to year. A quarter of it comes from our residential customers, another quarter from our commercial customers, and then roughly the balance coming from our industrial customers, and then our two largest players. Two customers alone can make up about 25% of our total sales that we have here. So these are very important, and not only to the community, but to the utility itself, and our success and our ability to do what we do hinges a lot around how well the James Smucker Company and Quality Castings are doing, not only in the electric side of the thing, but they would have big impacts on the water and wastewater side if these customers would choose to do business differently or do business someplace altogether. There's a larger breakout of where our larger customers are across the spectrum from an industrial perspective. And one of the bulk of our costs are costs that result from bringing the energy in from our various projects that we have some joint ownership in. And last year, roughly $23 million came, was spent to bring that energy from those projects. And the other portion, roughly $9 million, is utilities are being charged by the folks that have the high voltage transmission system. We need to get this energy from the other generation projects that are in some cases in other parts of this state to other locations that we have in West Virginia, Illinois, and Kentucky. So to bring that energy, even our wholesale purchases that we make from other entity, we bring that energy in from the grid, and we basically have to pay fees to get that energy into us. And these fees keep on going up tremendously every year. We'll see in this chart on how those charges have come into our cost structure. These are direct pass-through cost numbers. We don't have any control over what these are. As you can see, they go up almost every year, and we're subject to paying them. We're not immune. Orville and other communities pay these these huge transmission fees to upgrade the grid, provide reliability and things along that line, that we've been able to, up until 2017, we were able to control a majority of that ourselves. Now the DEPA has put restrictions on the plant and we're not operating 24/7, where we're a lot more reliant on the grid, and of course with the grid comes some baggage. So it's kind of like driving your car on the turnpike. If you want a smooth road and you want it to be reliable and get you from point A to point B versus taking a county road across state, you're going to be stopping by the toll gate and paying some money. But you can kind of see where the charges have been. But you know, the good news about, even though the plant is only operating during these peak periods of times, if we're operating at the time when the grid is experiencing a stress or high demand, we can generate credits for that. And these credits offset a lot of these fees. A bulk of these credits come from the power plant. And then when we purchased the three emergency peaking diesel generators that are located out at the wastewater treatment plant from our state association, those two also generated some credits to it. And actually, in 2022, we actually netted into black on that one. So that's a good thing. That's a big reason why we've been able to keep our rates stabilized since 2017. Is we've because normally we would have these. We'd have an extra $9 million of revenue that we would have to collect. So that plant, even though it's not generating electricity on a 24/7 basis, it's offsetting these high, tremendously high and ever-increasing transmission costs. And you can kind of see where those are kind of going out. This just kind of gives us some kind of sense on how our sales are equated to things going on in the economy, whether they're recessions or what our large industrial customers are doing. But yeah, we've been on a relatively, you know, fairly stable sales trend, other than, you know, the impact of COVID. And then if we look back a little bit further, we had the impacts of the recession there. But our total sales pretty much mimic what our industrial customers are doing. If you remember back to the pie chart, our industrial customers use a little bit, you know, roughly half of our energy that we either generate ourselves or coming from our projects. Our residential usage pretty much has stayed the same. Our commercial usage really doesn't vary too much on a year-to-year basis, but. When our large industrial customers are doing good, not only are, you know, does that help us out on the revenue side of things there, but that also gives us a little bit of a temperature on how well the city side of our world is doing too good. So healthy customers mean healthy utilities and healthy city services. This just kind of gives you an idea where our revenues have been tracking over the past couple years, and we put this together while we were in COVID, and and you can kind of see these two dotted lines, 2020 and 2021, is the impacts of COVID, and then, you know, that it beat up on the utilities just like everybody else. But for the most part, coming out of 2021 and as we've worked through 2022, we've pretty much come back to pre-COVID conditions as far as our customers go. That's a good sign. Our outage types and our outage downtimes, we had a lot of Mother Nature calling on us in a big way last year. Our outage duration time did upticked a little bit. We were averaging just about an hour and 15 minute overall average customer outage time for all the outages over the course of the year. That picked up about 20 minutes in 2022, but we had a lot of storm-related things that just increased those duration times a little bit there. But the types, trees, equipment, squirrels, are friendly, you know, long-tailed friends. Those type of culprits really don't change too much, despite some of the mitigation efforts that we have out on our lines to try to keep those out of there. And then we do have a pretty aggressive tree trimming program. We spend a lot of money on those, but trees still find a way of coming down. It's pretty fortunate that a lot of the the wind events that we've had during the storms, whether the ones in the fall or the ones in the spring, we haven't had leaves on the trees. Otherwise, those outages would be a little more widespread and a little bit more sustained. We'll talk a little bit about our projects. These haven't changed too much. You've seen these projects before, but we have investments in four run-of-the-river hydro projects. These are just three of them down here. We have three of them in Ohio, one in Kentucky. Those units came online in 2012. We have an interest in one of the last coal-fired plants that was built and even allowed to be permitted in the United States, out in Illinois, a little southeast of St. Louis. This unit is sitting right on top of its coal supply, so about 220 feet below this plant, and then the surrounding 800 acres that this plant owns, there's a 9-foot coal seam located underneath there. So they literally dig a hole in the ground and conveyor the coal up, and it avoids having to rail it in or truck it in and all those other transportation costs in there. So it helps keep the fuel cost and the overall operational cost of that that unit down. And our Orville is part of our state association and owns roughly 25% of this facility, but we only receive about roughly about 6% of our energy from this plant. But this is a base loaded plant, and by that I mean this plant pretty much runs 24/7. Our hydro projects, and we'll see a little bit how they operate here in the next slide, they're not running all the time, just based on the river conditions. The Fremont Natural Gas Plant, this is a state-of-the-art combined cycle natural gas plant. This is where we get a majority of our energy costs from. It's been a pretty low cost, a very high reliable unit over the years. We purchased this off of First Energy back in the early 2010 time frame, went commercial in 2012. And up until this past summer, when the natural gas prices peaked up, this was again one of our more cheaper operating resources. Our solar fields, we have three of those. Those are also part of our state joint action project. Orville's one of about 15 communities that own several of these located in three states: Ohio, Michigan, and Virginia. And we have two of those sites here in town. One is back behind Smith Dairy on Dairy Lane, back where Venture Products facility is at, and then the other one is on the end of Allen Avenue, just in front of the wastewater treatment plant as you're going out of town on High Street. I'll skip over a couple of these things. One of the things that we have to kind of balance in the energy market is electricity can't be stored, or at least economically stored, so we have to be cognizant of the fact that we have cost of the energy coming from our various projects. We know that our projects don't operate 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and especially some of our renewables. So one of the things we try to look at is trying to balance the cost of the project. How often is it operated? And this chart and this other chart just kind of helps us manage that that portfolio of energy, because at the end of the day, our customers really don't care where the electrons come from. They just want the cheap ones and they want the reliable ones. So we have to manage what's on, what's off, predict what our customer loads are on a day-to-day basis. And if the energy is not coming from these various projects, we're out on the market on that. And the energy market prices change every 5 minutes. So it's kind of like trading stocks sometimes. I mentioned now how often these power generation units operate over the course of the year. And these are capacity charts here. And basically what it says, if we had 100 hours, or if the unit was in service 100% of the time, its capacity factor would be 100%. So in the case of hydro projects, we don't control the flow of the river, for example. During the fall and the springtime, there's usually a lot of rain on the high river. River levels get up high, and the way the hydro plants operate is they operate on elevation difference. So we always want it to be high river conditions on the upstream side of the hydro plant, and we want the river levels on the discharge side to be as low as possible. And the greater the differential is, the more output we can get out of the hydro projects. So when we have these high rain conditions that affect all the watersheds that flow into the Ohio River, that river level, that differential comes closer together, and the output drops on there. So you can kind of see the output picks up in the summertime, drops off in the fall, and picks up. As compared to our Prairie State project, again, that plant for the most part runs 24/7. The time here in October, when the unit was down for a scheduled outage. Our Blue Creek Wind project, that project we did not own the wind units. We just took energy out of those, but you can kind of see up until July how often those units operated. So, you know, if we were big fans of wind and we wanted all of our wind energy to come, or all of our energy to come from wind or our solar sites, you can see that we could have hundreds of acres of solar fields out there, but the sun is only shining so many hours a day. And for the most part, our three solar sites, over the course of the year, they only produce electricity 20% of the time. So we love these things when they're running, but the problem is, what do you do with the energy needs in between there? So that's where these other resources come in and kind of fill the gaps. And that's sometimes when we have a little bit of agreeing to disagreeing with some of our more environmental friends out there that say that, you know, we should have more solar, we should have more wind, we should have some more hydro in there. The problem is, where's this stuff in between coming from? And oftentimes that stuff comes from generation resources that we don't like, nuclear plants or coal plants or things along that line, plants that are designed to operate, and they don't care about the weather or the sunshine or the how much water is flowing down the river. Going back and talking a little bit about our rates, because really at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. But this is Oroville Utilities. We're surrounded by two investor-owned utilities, AEP and First Energy. You can kind of see where our city and our inside and our residential or our external outside city limit rates are at. And you can kind of see where AEP's at. You can kind of see where First Energy's at. And come June, First Energy has a pretty significant rate increase coming on board. And that's really due a lot, mainly driven by a lot of the high energy prices that we experienced this summer. We saw natural gas prices go up. We saw regular gasoline prices go up, and those high transmission costs that we saw earlier. So they are going up into some places there that are just downright scary. This is the reason why we come in and we do what we do every day, is trying to keep these differentials down where they're at. From a nationwide perspective, this is how we stack up. Oroville's in the green, and across the nation, across the United States, this is how we stack up against all of the investor-owned utilities, the co-ops that are out there. And you can kind of see, green. Green's good. That's the place that we want to be. I like to show this chart to give you some kind of sense on where the energy markets have been over the past couple of decades, and explains part of the reason why we got into some of these long-term projects with our state association AMP. Back in the early 2000 periods, energy prices were going up and up and up. The good news about that, during that time period, we were still generating at the plant. We had very stable energy prices. We weren't really subject to these market prices other than the time that we had to buy energy out in the market. But we were under some big, and that really hasn't changed too much today, but the EPA was having a real good time in Washington. Regulations were flying out of there on a daily basis. We were cognizant of the plant, or the concept that the plant was aging. And we saw the need to be looking long, because our customers are expecting to have electric, water, and wastewater services, not just next year or 5 years. They want they want the some comfort in knowing that we have some plans out there that are 10 years, 20 years down the road. So we saw some vulnerabilities in the marketplace, and just with our own generating plant from environmental and the possibility of being shut down or having to early retire some units, that we started diversifying our portfolio. That's when we started looking at investing in new coal, the natural gas, and some of these renewables. So things were going up. We decided to get into these projects back in here, and then the recession hit in 2008 and 2009, dropped the prices down into places that that we hadn't seen in prior years. The plant was still operating very efficiently. We stopped. We did start generating a little bit less, but those prices continued to come down. And the reason that they started coming down even further was that's when we started finding all these big shale gas deposits in Pennsylvania and West Virginia area, and it dropped the natural gas prices down low. And when natural gas prices go low, the energy markets also kind of follow along the same trend. So we saw a decline in there. And things were going real great until this past summer. We all saw what happened to us at the pumps. We saw what happened to our natural gas aggregation program, where our natural gas prices tripled. The impacts of the conflict in Ukraine drove the gas markets into places that they have never been in a long time, caused everything to uptick. The good news is they're starting to come back down now. So it's where they end up at, I'm not really too sure, but at least from our perspective, because we're out on the market 25-30% of the time, the more those come down, the lower our costs are, and the less we have to be thinking about changing rates. Going a little bit global on here, this kind of gives you a sense on where the United States generation sources have been over the past decades, and show some of the big fundamental shifts. You can kind of see in 2010, coal was a big part of what was supplying energy to most of our customers in the United States. That's been kind of replaced by natural gas, and a lot of the renewables have come on there. So this is just a little graphical picture of that. I'll skip through that. The slides are getting kind of a little micronized here, but they read good on your handouts. And like I said, Ms. Strimling will be providing a little bit more detail. But for the most part, all three of our utilities are financially very healthy. Electric and water have been debt-free for a number of years. We just paid off our last interest debt product in the water department this year. We just have a small amount of zero interest loans to pay back. So financially, we are all in good shape. Again, apologize a little bit for the smaller print, but this just lists some of the capital projects that we're involved in, and I'll just highlight a couple of them. We'll be spending roughly 10 to maybe $11, $12 million on this second transmission interconnection, and we spent $5, $6 million on some transformers last year. We made a lot of improvements in the water plant last year. We'll be picking up on some capital projects in the wastewater department in 23 and 24. Near the end here, I would like to end with some upbeat stuff from an economic perspective. We had a lot of good development this year with McElroy and Jarrett Logistics. J.M. Smucker, Steve mentioned this in his presentation, added a few more jobs. We invested another $5 million, and since we've been keeping track of this thing since 2002, coming up on $500 million worth of investments that have come into this community, along with a bunch of jobs. Wayne County still is a leader from an economic perspective. The problem is we get a lot of leads for a lot of opportunities. We had about 58 leads come into Ohio for jobs. The thing about these guys are looking for mega acreage, 100, 200 acres. The last The last eight leads that we have, they are looking for people in the 1,000-person range. I have no idea where we're going to get 1,000 people in Wayne County for some of these jobs, but they are big leads that are coming in way outside our capability. We only have one small industrial site left. We are still trying to work our way through the economics of a potential third industrial park, but that's a big reach for us to get that that park ready to be somewhat shovel ready to accommodate a lead that wouldn't require some development there. So we continue to look at that, but we could be looking at an investment of $6 million in a site that we're really not too sure what the returns would be for us. But we do have some limitations on what we can bring into town. Coming down the road, we always have climate change issues and environmental issues targeting the plant. We talked about these transmission costs that as long as we can offset those things with the with the generation plant in the way of credits there, that'll keep our rates down. Talk about the industrial park. We're exploring a number of different grants. We've got several in the queue. I will tell you there is still no free money out there. These grants still have some strings attached to them that you have to be aware of there. But they're out there. They're difficult to get, but we're trying for a lot of those. We do have a threat against the possible early closure of the Prairie State project. That's that coal plant out in Illinois. The state decided they don't like coal in their state anymore, and they want to rely on nuclear and solar out there. So they have put some big restrictions on the fossil fuel generation resources that are there. And the last thing we want is to have to retire a plant early and still have to make a mortgage payment for it. So it is threatening closing that plant roughly 2 years before we have the debt service paid off on that. That hasn't been finalized yet, but it's something that's on the radar and could have an impact on us. And we are looking at all of our rates again for all the utilities. And I think that's it. At the end of this presentation, there's a bunch more slides in the package that the Gene mailed out to you that have some more supplemental information on there and a lot of details. So that's a lot of information. We went over a lot of what we've seen before, but a few new things. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has. And if there aren't any, I know Steve's looking to get to a baseball or basketball game coming up here real soon. That it?
I'd just like to say thank you for your leadership with everything you do here at AMP. I think we are extremely lucky to have you in your position, and you're not allowed to ever retire.
No, well, we have some great people. We lost Dean Caliborn, who was the electric utility manager, retired last year. That was 38 years that walked out the door there. So we miss those. But we've had good people in there. When Todd Fetty and Bob Alton retired, both of those individuals walked out with 30, 35 years and, of experience in the course of about a six-month window. But we've been very fortunate to hire great leaders in there. So they make what we do here look pretty easy. So we have an outstanding workforce. I'm really one of the last of the old guard that's still out roaming around there, but I don't know how far I'll fulfill your request there, but I'll take it under advisement. Okay, anything else? Okay, I'll return turn you back to your regularly scheduled channel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
What? Why am I just not here?
All right, thanks very much for that report, Mr. Brenniger. We'll move on now on our agenda to any comments for the good of the order. Mr. Larson.
I'd like to invite everybody to Wayne College next Tuesday night. That's the 11th for candidates night. I believe the mayoral candidates for both cities will be, both Orville and Worcester will be there, and as well as council candidates.
Very good. Anyone else?
Yes. Yes. I just want to, the reason for my decision on what I had, let them know, for the artwork downtown, I believe that we need to give the public a little bit of a notice and a little bit more of a chance to give their opinions and thoughts. After all, it is coming out of the capital fund. We do have big capital projects that we had to do. We just approved the fire truck. I think with everything there, we need to hear public opinion on if they think it's feasible or not. That's where I stand on that.
Okay, so again, a $25,000 expense, and our council representative is inviting public input on whether or not council can take on that obligation at this time. Anyone else? Mr. Mosley.
Yeah, for one, I like Shanklin. I know that takes courage to vote no. And I do understand your reason. If you don't fully, you know, agree with it, obviously you don't know. And fortunately tonight, it, you know, didn't go the way as expected. But I mean, that takes courage. I just want to let you know that. So that was definitely the time to think and reconsider and move on.
Anyone else? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Orson moves.
Second.
Ms. Carr.
Asparis.
Yes.
Shanklin.
Yes.
Larson.
Yep.
Carr.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Hanberg.
Yes.
All eyes. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you very much. Our next regularly scheduled meeting is April 17th, and so we will hear the finance annual report. Until then, we are adjourned. Thank you.
I'm going to be